Hello, I'm Elizabeth Jackson and you're listening to a Radio Current Affairs documentary. Christmas is supposed to be a time of joy and indulgence, but for many Australians suffering from eating disorders, it's torture. Every new year, many resolve to recover, very few achieve it. Navigating through a health system which is ill-equipped and expensive doesn't usually deliver the cure patients are looking for. But now a new treatment approach from Hawaii is providing hope to many. Elise Denman reports.
Imagine you're on the banks of a raging river. It's pouring down rain, and you slip and you fall in, and you're drowning. You're getting pulled down through the rapids. And along comes a big log, and you grab on, and the log saves your life. And eventually, it carries you to a place in the river where the water is calm.
This metaphor represents the latest approach to treating eating disorders.
As you're holding on to the log, you see the shore on the other side, but you can't get there because of the log. So the very thing that saved your life is now getting in the way of you going where you want to go in life.
Dr. Anita Johnston created this story to explain how people develop eating disorders to cope with intense emotions.
Women who struggle with eating disorders are what I call thin-skinned. And what I mean by that is they're very emotionally sensitive and highly intuitive. If you're born thin-skinned into a world that values being thick-skinned, which is the Western culture we live in today that values, oh, no big deal, water off a duck's back, doesn't bother me, then what happens is you get this idea, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with me. And so begins the process of trying to be thick-skinned when you're not. And that's the function of the eating disorder, because it blocks your awareness of very deep, intense emotions. So what has to happen is they have to develop the skill set for how to be a thin-skinned person in a thick-skinned world. And it is a skill set. You don't need to change your DNA. Anybody can learn it. But it does take practice, and it does take being able to go someplace where it's taught.
It's the first therapy of its kind in Australia to treat eating disorders as a sole sickness rather than a lifelong disease. More on this cutting-edge therapy a little later, but first meet Katie. She recently graduated from the program after a decade of binging and restriction.
I mean, this has sort of changed over the years, but when it was particularly bad, you know, like I'd wake up and the first thought would be, you know, check your body, look at your arms, look at your thighs, and then measuring out my breakfast and being quite anxious about that. And yeah, there's some sort of safety and comfort in it, but at the same time, it's exhausting. Like in 10 years, I haven't had rest from it, really.
There's surprisingly very little statistical data on eating disorders in Australia, but it's estimated that in 2012, more than 1,800 Australians died from conditions resulting from eating disorders. That's higher than last year's annual road toll. Treatment in Australia is at best patchy.
I looked reasonably healthy, like I was never overweight. To look at me from the outside, you wouldn't have known I had an eating disorder, and I kept it quite hidden quite well. And so I felt like there was no help for someone in that situation. You know, I wasn't at the anorexic point where I needed to be in hospital, but I also wasn't functioning. So I felt like there was no place for me. And yeah, I saw GPs who basically didn't know much about eating disorders at all, and they just put me on medication, or they, you know, referred me to someone who, you know, a psychologist or psychiatrist who, again, didn't really know about eating disorders, and I really didn't know what was going on, and nobody else seemed to really know what was going on.
Yvonne Iglesias was a budding 14-year-old athlete when she first realised she was bigger than the other girls at camp. She battled bulimia and an exercise addiction for 14 years. Cognitive behavioural therapy didn't get Yvonne the full recovery she had dreamed of.
It felt like I had to do a lot of searching on my own, and I sat one afternoon and I made call after call to different clinics, different programs, you know, via hospitals, and there were so many criteria which I didn't fit a lot of because I didn't have a lot of the behaviours happening, but I still knew I needed help with the eating disorder because of the way my mind was working. But it was really disheartening because I kept thinking, this is as good as it gets with this kind of treatment.
She is now the program director at EatFed, the Centre for Education and Therapy for Eating Difficulties in Sydney. It was founded last year with clinical director Sue Payton, who has been a psychotherapist and educator for 18 years.
What came out of that was us talking about how do we do something different in Australia. And we came across Dr. Anita Johnson's book called Eating in the Light of the Moon. And it was a really different approach to the way eating disorders are treated here in Australia. So I contacted her, and she was here 12 months later training our staff, and we started our intensive outpatient program in Sydney that treats women with anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder and emotional overeating.
EatFed's consultant, Dr. Anita Johnston, has been treating eating disorders at her own clinic in Hawaii for 30 years. She was shocked to see just how far Australia lagged behind other nations in terms of treatment options.
I had thought that the treatment model was similar to the US, and I was surprised to find that that wasn't the case. And even to this day, my understanding is that the medical model is very strong, and the medical model is one that is more about eliminating the symptom rather than clearing the underlying issues. And the problem with that is what they discovered in the States is you end up with the revolving door syndrome. Sure, you can get somebody back to weight, but as soon as they leave the facility, they're back doing what they're doing because the root issues have never been cleared. Whether it's trauma or just a way of coping with difficult emotions or not knowing how to express their feelings, if that doesn't get resolved, the eating disorder is not going to go away. You can do weight restoration, you know, but the focus in the U.S. is more on complete recovery, which requires not just treating the symptomology, but the underlying issues as well. And that takes time.
Elizabeth is now in recovery after enduring 10 years of anorexia and bulimia.
In the beginning, seeing psychologists seemed pointless because I felt like I was informing them as to what living with an eating disorder was like, and they were trying to come back at me with textbook responses, and I was having to say, no, well, yes, that's correct, but it's actually is like this. And then they would ask me questions, and I felt like I was the educator.
Do you feel like GPs struggled in knowing what to do or how to help you?
I quite often feel like they have a list of resources that they know where to send people with an eating disorder, but they don't actually know too much about what the resources offer. And I think there needs to be more of a sort of integrative approach, like a sort of a teamwork agreement where the doctor is sort of more aware of what it is to have an eating disorder and is working with the specialist who is helping that person overcome their demons.
Last year, the federal government funded a report into eating disorders. It was the first government report undertaken in 10 years. Called Paying the Price, the report revealed that the economic cost of eating disorder-related illnesses in 2012 alone was nearly $70 billion. This included productivity losses, health system costs, and out-of-pocket expenses for individuals and their families. It conceded that delays in diagnosis and access to care has exacerbated the problems. One key recommendation is for better coordination of healthcare through Medicare Local. The report also called for increased Medicare rebates for psychological treatment. Currently, Medicare subsidised visits to psychologists are capped at 10 visits per year. Psychotherapist Sue Payton says the report fails to consider new forms of outpatient treatment.
We've had people come to our program, want to do our outpatient treatment program, and then we've sent them away to their GP to get their medical clearance because they have to be medically stable to come into the outpatient program. And they go to their GP and their GP says, no, this is not what you should be doing. I'm going to send you to a psychologist and you will get 10 sessions, mostly partially covered by Medicare, not always all of it covered by Medicare. And to me, to think that someone could recover from something as debilitating and as serious as an eating disorder in 10 sessions, it just begs belief. Like, I don't understand how anybody could think that that could happen.
This year, the New South Wales government pledged $15 million across 5 years as part of a new eating disorders service plan. The money will go towards increasing the amount of hospital beds in the state from 4 to 9. It will also establish a new adult eating disorder day program in Newcastle and a pilot child and adolescent day program. The New South Wales Mental Health Minister, Kevin Humphreys, says he believes it's enough.
It's not all about having more inpatient beds. People really only need to access an inpatient bed if they're physically unwell. It's about physically stabilising people.
Okay, so it sounds like you're focusing more so on anorexia, and the report does talk about having over 900,000 people in Australia suffering from an ED, but in particular, 26,000 of those have anorexia. From what the New South Wales service model is doing, it's increasing the amount of beds, inpatient beds, that we have from 4 to 9. Doesn't that alarm you?
No, not at all. That's what the sector wanted. And I wouldn't overestimate the number of people that have an eating disorder. But the beds that we've funded and the day programs are quite different. The complex beds are really about targeting those very, very complex and stubborn cases.
Sue Payton.
It's still not enough. It's nowhere near enough for people, and especially for people with anorexia who are often at that point of needing the gastric feeding and they have nowhere to go and often are just put in a ward overnight and then have to leave. So it's actually appalling what is available for people who cannot afford treatment.
Minister Humphreys concedes there is a workforce training problem, but says that responsibility rests with the federal government.
GPs are not the remit of the state government. GPs are sole operators and they have a contractual arrangement with the federal government. So are there some workforce issues? Yes, there are. But a good GP will know what their limits are and they will know where to be able to make referrals to people for support. The difficulty for GPs under the Medicare system is they are time rated, and when you are looking at working with somebody over, you know, what is most likely going to be anywhere between a 5 and a 10 year period, and involving lots of counselling, the GP's time frame isn't necessarily set up for that.
The New South Wales government is running an online training program to educate and build the confidence of general practitioners. But despite thousands of requests for national access, the federal government has not extended the program. The ABC contacted the Office for the Federal Health Minister, Peter Dutton, but he was not available for comment. This gap in services has led to private clinics such as EatFed launching their own practitioner training workshops.
These areas really need to start to open their minds up to other ways of treating eating disorders. And we are running practitioner trainings and we are getting psychiatrists and psychologists and dietitians and teachers and, you know, all of those people coming in and saying, wow, this is a completely different way of looking at eating disorders and this actually makes so much sense. So one of our goals is to start to get that information out so as something different can be done.
It's a miserable wet Sunday morning at the University of Technology in Sydney. 40 social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists and school teachers have travelled interstate to attend a day-long workshop. Sue and Yvonne stand at the whiteboard and note down the questions that come thick and fast.
Yeah. I'm a clinical psychologist who works in our public mental health service on the outpatient clinic, and our inpatient unit is quite closely located. So the difficulty I have is, you know, interfacing some of the psychotherapy work when the clients are on the inpatient unit, because all that seems to get put aside and the focus is a lot more on the medical issues and so on.
We could do an entire seminar just talking about that gap. You know, it's really, it really is the biggest problem, is we either have the medical model or we have us at the moment. Yeah. That's it.
If I just think, for example, a teenage client came in this week whose mum said, she has an eating disorder, I think she's purging, and I now know that she's not really going to recover because it's tough to recover from eating disorders, and she's saying all of this in front of a 16-year-old, saying, well, that's it, life's over, almost. And to me, it's, of course, challenging managing that, but then how do we manage the language around eating disorders, particularly for the younger clientele who don't want to associate with, I have an eating disorder?
What's some of the things that you're going over with them?
I think probably the main thing that we're helping them understand is that when treating someone with an eating disorder, right at the very beginning of their treatment, the idea is actually not to stop the behaviours, because the behaviours inform us as practitioners what's going on psychologically, what's going on emotionally, what's going on with the behaviours, because our underlying philosophy is that eating disorders are actually relationship disorders. What happens now is you go into hospital and the behaviours have to stop immediately. And to us, that just doesn't make sense.
The outpatient program at EatFend is the first of its kind in Australia. Much of its teaching is through metaphor and storytelling. Dr. Anita Johnston says the food and the struggle over weight is just the arena in which a much deeper struggle is played out.
You know, if somebody is restricting their food, that's not the only thing they're restricting. They're restricting their feelings. They're restricting their relationships. They're restricting new experiences. If somebody is binging and purging, there's so many areas in their life where they just take in too much and then they got to get rid of it. They don't know how to get the kind of balance. And somebody who's struggling with binge eating disorder, they live in a life of scarcity. It's not that there's not just food, there's not enough, but there's never enough time, and there's never enough attention, and there's never enough affection, there's never enough, never enough, and never enough, and they try to fill with food. And so it's sort of like following the breadcrumbs. You recognize that the struggle, the food and the eating is actually symbolic language for what the real issues are.
Talking about metaphors, can you explain the log for me?
So I use this metaphor to introduce the idea that there's a skill set that somebody needs to learn in order to let go of their eating disorder. And unfortunately, it's a skill set that's not usually taught in schools. It's not usually taught in our home. And the skill is developing the capacity to recognize your feelings and express them with words in a way that honors who you are and also honors the recipient of what it is you're having to say.
So what do you do instead? Let go of the log and try floating. And when you start to sink, grab back on. Then you let go of the log and you practice treading water. And when you get tired, you grab back on. Whatever it takes for you to have the strength and confidence to make it to shore. Then you let go of the log.
Sue Payton and Yvonne Iglesias lead the 18-week program focused on building these skills for recovery.
Dr. Anita Johnston, whose program it is, she says she's never seen anybody recover from an eating disorder who hasn't had to learn how to be assertive and also who hasn't had to have some kind of emotional recovery. So you usually find these women are in relationships or in families where they're really struggling. And so where we spend the 8 weeks of the program teaching them all these different skills that they need to learn. So it's life skills, then it's food and feeling. So we do focus on food, but we focus on more of the process around the food. So it's not whether they eat or not, it's how they feel about eating, what they're thinking while they're eating, And then we have group process, so where we're dealing with the relationships in the group.
So you've said you know that it works. What are some of the indications that you have if you can't measure something?
Yeah.
How is that coming out at the end?
So, I mean, one of the measures we do use is the eating attitudes test. So we do that at the beginning of the program, and then we also do that test at the end of the program. And there's always significant levels that have dropped in terms of the disordered eating, the behaviours, the attitude towards food. It's quite an extensive test. So we have that. But what happens in that 18 weeks often is a complete turnaround in terms of how these women change their lives. They start to do things that they have been wanting to do for a long time. You know, they gain the courage to move out of home if they need to, or they gain the courage to leave a job that they hate, you know. And these are the things where we start to see not only their relationships to other people, but their relationship to themselves is the biggest thing that changes, because they start to learn to have some compassion for themselves and some empathy for themselves, and start to understand that they haven't done this to themselves, because they often feel so guilty because they feel like they're causing so much distress to their family, and they can't stop it. And so once they start to get this knowledge and they start to learn that actually they're okay, then everything changes. And that's, I think, you know, we have a woman graduating tonight, and same thing. She's just completely changed her life since she's been in the program. And, it's great to see.
It's late afternoon at EatFed, and 10 women sit in a circle to celebrate Bess's graduation. This is the safest place they know. They each take turns to congratulate her and share memories of how her journey has impacted on their own. And now it's Bess's turn.
I don't really remember myself back when I first started. I think about 7-8 months now. Yeah, I just remember coming here and thinking, I don't really know if I have an eating disorder, though. But I think the big thing for me was that it had been going on for so long that it was normal. I've seen other documentaries and read other things, and they never really hit home to me because they were so restricted in fitting a certain portrayal of a part of an eating disorder that I was like, I don't fit that, so I don't have one. But to sort of have it opened up and realise that, in a way, it doesn't matter if it's anorexic, bulimic, or any other style, they really are so similar in the end. And you can't tell if someone has an eating disorder by how they look. And, yeah, I just want to say thank you for changing my life and also for everyone's support. Every time that it just sort of felt like I didn't know where to step next. And that's what I think the beauty of group is, that you can see someone who's on the other way rather than where you were. And I look back at some of the girls now who are really in that hard stage and think, oh, I remember being there, but can't really explain and tell you that it does just change.
The path to recovery is often long and unpredictable. Yvonne Inglesos knows this all too well.
For me, you know, when I've done talks and I talk about having a quiet mind, that is the one thing that the women with eating disorders come up and go, I want that. And a lot of people are symptom-free, but they haven't got that. They haven't got a quiet mind, and they still struggle a lot in relationships. And for me, that's, you know, that's a little bit longer-term recovery, but it's absolutely possible.
After everything that you've been through for so many years, why would you want to go through it all over again every day?
You know, it's not just a job. It's absolutely, I was impacted so much by having had an eating disorder. And I often say, you know, it definitely took majority of my 20s and majority of my teens. And I don't think that's uncommon. And so for me, it's really about empowering women, because the women who have eating disorders are amazing human beings. And if we can harness the energy they put into the eating disorder into them healing, then there's going to be some amazing changes, because they're usually, you know, in fantastic positions at work, or they have amazing talents, and the eating disorder is debilitating to the point where they don't get to live in their power. And so for me, it's about that. It's you know, getting them to reclaim the life that they want, whatever that is. And it's definitely not having an eating disorder, because there's no fun in that. It's painful.
Program Director at Eat Fed, Yvonne Iglesias, ending that report from Elise Denman. And you've been listening to a Radio Current Affairs documentary.